Now, thirdly, we come to the five basic methods of meditation. And you may ask, why five? And there are five basic methods of meditation because in this arrangement, the methods of meditation correspond to the five mental poisons. Enlightenment or Buddhahood is within us all, but it's obscured, it's covered over, just as the sky by dark clouds, but it's there behind them or underneath them all the time. And this obscuring factor, this cloud or this darkness of ignorance, of avidya, can be looked at in a number of different ways, from a number of different points of view. We can analyze it, we can split it up. So if we analyze it, if we split it up, we find that this obscuring factor consists of what we call the five mental poisons, which stand between us and our own innate enlightenment. And these five mental poisons are, first of all, distraction or distractedness, multiplicity of wandering thoughts, inability to concentrate, mental confusion, and so on. And then secondly, anger or aversion or hatred. Then thirdly, lust or craving. Fourthly, ignorance, in the sense of ignorance of spiritual things, of our own conditionality. And fifthly and lastly, conceit or pride or ego sense. So these are the five mental poisons. As some of you are writing them down, let me just go through them again quickly. Distraction, anger, craving, ignorance, conceit, the five mental poisons. Now, each of the five basic methods of meditation is designed as an antidote for one particular poison. So let us now just briefly describe these five basic methods and refer also to the poison of which they are meant to be the antidote. Now, first of all, the first of the five basic methods is one with which we're already acquainted, and perhaps acquainted very well, that is to say, the mindfulness of breathing practice, which we've done this morning and which we do in our meditation classes. This practice, mindfulness of breathing, is the antidote for the mental poison of distraction or distractedness. It eliminates wandering thoughts. That's one of the reasons why we practice it first, why we learn it first before any other method. Because we can't practice any of the other methods, or any method at all, until we've learned to concentrate. And concentration means unifying our attention, eliminating wandering thoughts. I'm not going to describe this method in detail, because most of us know it, and in any case, we've already practiced it this morning. So this is the first of the five basic methods. Mindfulness of the breathing process, leading to concentration and elimination of distraction, in the sense of wandering thoughts. Then secondly, our second basic method, the development of what we call metta or maitri, friendliness, loving kindness, or as we may say, not very exactly, but giving the spirit of the thing, universal love. And this, of course, is the antidote for anger or hatred. Some of you have practiced this method, others haven't. Some are expecting to practice it in the weekly classes in the course of a few weeks' time. So I shall just briefly run through the five main stages of this practice. It'll also help to refresh the memories of those who have done it, but it may be done it some time ago. In the first stage of this practice, we develop love towards ourselves. That's something which many people find very difficult indeed. They don't seem to be on very good terms with themselves, for one reason or another. So we develop love, first of all, towards ourselves. If you can't love yourself, you'll find it very difficult to love other people. You only project. Then in the second stage, where you develop love towards a near and dear friend, someone of the same sex, because if we think of someone of the opposite sex, craving may arise, someone of approximately the same age, within 10 or 15 years, and someone still living, not dead. So we visualize, if we can visualize, the image or figure of this person, and we develop love towards them, the same love that we develop towards ourselves, or even stronger, we now develop and actually feel towards that near and dear friend. And here I must emphasize, as I always emphasize, because it's so necessary, that what we're trying to develop in this type of practice is not a thought about developing a feeling, but the actual feeling itself. And lots of people, when they practice, find that they're, as it were, all dry inside. They can't squeeze out even a drop of feeling. But in the course of time, if they practice hard, they begin to feel. It's as though before they were all numb, all insensitive. They can't feel. But in the course of this practice, they begin to generate an inner warmth, a sort of glow of love towards themselves first, then towards this near and dear friend. And usually this second stage is the easiest for obvious reasons. Then in the third stage, we think of a neutral person, someone whose face we know very well, whom we've seen often, but towards whom we've no particular feeling, either positive or negative. We neither like them nor dislike them. So the same love that we felt towards the near and dear friend, we now direct, we now develop towards this neutral person. And then in the fourth stage, we think of someone whom we dislike, even an enemy, someone who's done us harm or an injury, and the same love we develop towards that person too. These are the first four stages, and they're, as it were, introductory. Then at the beginning of the fifth and last stage, we, as it were, line up all these four persons in front of our mental vision, self, near and dear friend, neutral person, enemy, and we develop the same love equally towards all. Then we go a little further, we spread a little wider, we develop the same love, we direct the same love towards all the people in the room where we're meditating, all the people in the locality, all the people in the city, the country. Then continent by continent, we go all the way around the world. We think of all men, all women, all nationalities, races, religions, even animals, even beings, maybe, who are higher than human beings, beings which the Buddhist tradition calls devas, deities, or even higher than that, spiritual teachers like the Buddha, Milarepa, Kuen-en, and so on, even non-Buddhist spiritual teachers, whoever is eminent for any good quality, and we develop love towards all of them. And in this way we find as though we're being carried out of ourselves in ever-expanding circles. We forget ourselves, sometimes quite literally, and we become enfolding in an ever-expanding circle of love. And this can be a very tangible experience for those who practice, even after a comparatively short time. One does find here the matter of temperament is rather important. Some people take to the metta practice like ducks to water, and they enjoy it immensely within a matter of minutes. But others have to strain and struggle before they get that little spark of love and before they start radiating that metta. Many of them feel that the talk of radiating metta is just a joke. They don't see how they're ever going to do it. But they do, in the end, with a bit of practice, a bit of perseverance. After all, it's all there. If even Buddhahood, if even enlightenment is within, well, why not just metta? That's surely even simpler. So this is the second type of practice, the second of these five basic methods of meditation. Metta Bhavana, development of universal love.